We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Just a 2-hour show today. Royals baseball on the air a little after 1 o'clock. Vern's on deck show at noon today. There is a doubleheader due to last night's game getting rained out. We already knew we had a day game, and they're just going with a straight doubleheader today. So nothing on our schedule changes, but we looked at the weather this morning, and it shouldn't be a problem in terms of getting the game in Chicago today. So Royals didn't get a play last night. We have to hopefully get two wins today. That's fine. Two wins in one day works as well.
It's the White Sox, so it's certainly on the table. Little double dip. Who's the 26th man, you know?
Or 27th.
Or 27th.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it was Royals Review, maybe. Somebody put that there. Like, it is actually pretty wild that it's April 17th, and this speaks to how good things are going right now. This is their first move they've had to make with the big league club.
Oh, yeah. Well, because Massey hasn't been called back up. And they've never sent down a single bullpen arm. No. Same roster.
It's kind of wild.
Like, even Salvador Perez didn't have to go to the IL. Presumably, he'll play one of the two games today, we would assume. But he wasn't in the lineup last night. No. Contrero made it sound like he was going to give him one more day, although he did say he was going to be available off the bench. There's no way you can tell Salvador Perez three consecutive days he doesn't get to play. He just won't catch both games.
Right. And that probably would not have happened anyway.
You missed our conversation, Gold, before. Cody and I were talking about Michael Garcia, and what does he have to do to salvage a little bit more
he
time.
Only gets the doubleheader today, or I'm recording.
He goes
0-for-8 between two games today. I'm singing tomorrow. If he goes 1-for-8, I'm probably still singing tomorrow. If he goes 2-for-8, he gets a brief reprieve. He gets a little bit of time. He gets a little grace, a little leeway.
Okay.
Anything better than that? You know,
I'm just glad that it's not happening today. I'm glad that you didn't say, well, they didn't play last night, I'm doing it anyway. Because I think it's a little early.
I think it's fair. Like, the fact that it became a doubleheader made it less likely because it gave him a chance for redemption before that point. Plus, I had an hour of dad dance rehearsal last night, so I got home late. There was a whole new set of choreography to learn.
And?
It needs some work. I need some work. Not the choreography. I have no place
to complain. Were all the dads there this time?
Nope. Still some people who are just going to learn it virtually, which, I mean.
Oh, good luck with that.
That's tough.
Good. I mean, honestly, best of luck figuring it out via Zoom or whatever, because I'm barely hanging on by a thread, and I've been at every single minute of the practice to that time. So it's going somewhere. Do I have to share the video with you guys, or do I just make you find it on your own? Somebody's going to take video of it. I don't have to just give it to you. I don't have to make it that easy for you, do I?
I don't know. We mentioned SNL yesterday. This feels like I can't remember the comedian that
Heidi did Gardner?
No, that's what we mentioned yesterday.
Oh.
But what you just said, which is, do I have to give it to you, or do you guys have to find? This reminds me, there's like a 1920s party skit on SNL, and it's basically like they're like asking someone else to sing at the event. And then the other character's like, oh, you don't want to make me sing, do you? And then
they're
asking other people to perform. And then this one gal in the skit keeps saying
about.
Like, well, I don't want to sing, you guys. I feel like that's where we're at.
Maybe with the singing on this show, you might be onto something. I am still not comfortable enough with any of the dance moves I am doing in this to want the video widespread. I can assure you of that.
Well,
I will be practicing before I do this.
The video will make its way out one way or the other, whether it's an intentional leak, whether it's from, we'll contact the dance studio.
the dance studio.
Something. We'll offer, if they send us the video, we'll give them a shout out on the air. How about that? I think that's fair. That works. I just need the video.
Small dance studio. But my daughter loves it, if you're interested.
let's talk a little bit about the Royals, though, because you're right. They didn't play last night, weather and everything. Doubleheader today. and things are going great. 11-6 on the season. Got, as we just said, the first move is only happening because of doubleheader, which means you've been healthy, which means things are going good. If we're fast forwarding a couple weeks from now and there's a rough spot, because there will be a stretch of games at some point, I don't know when, where they drop a couple in a row. And how do you prevent it from a 3-game losing streak to becoming 6, right? We've talked about that in the past and they've never been able to prevent that. So that'll be the next big test at some point when they have a rough patch. They get, you know, 2 bad outings from their starting pitchers.
And they lose 4-5.
What's the reason, if there is a rough patch for more than 2 or 3 games, like most teams will have, what's the biggest thing that would come up that would cause that?
So I like you, do not think, like, I think it's safe to say that this is a talented team who's going to win some games. Like, I'm with Vinny in the sense of, we're just a good team, Joel. Like, we're going to win some games. But then I also have to do this, the same thing we would do with the Chiefs, and I think we've done this in, like, week 8, which is, if there's a reason they lose in the playoffs, and in this case, if there's a reason why the Royals' regular season stops going the way that it has been going, what's going to be the thing? I think it's obviously the bullpen. I think if there's a thing that could fall apart on them, it's that. Because the other arguments are starting pitching regression or just lack of offense, primarily from the back half of the offense, I would think, had been where you're at. But I still think the most likely culprit is the bullpen, because bullpens are fickle, and this is a completely rebuilt hodgepodge version of one. Here's a couple of veterans. Here's a couple of guys who've been here before. Here's a couple of younger guys, and it's a bullpen. And here's a guy like in MacArthur who had success late last season but doesn't have the track record to do it over the course of the long haul. If there's one part of the team that still gives me the, like, whoo, a little bit nervous, it's them. The offense, they've shown some massive upside in that end. So it's hard for me to think that the offense is going to be just some boat anchor at any point this year. And what does starting pitching regression look like? It can only go so far.
Other than injuries, right? We'll take that out of this because that applies to every team in baseball.
Yeah, that was the first text, right? 6-2-0 injury.
Other than injury, because clearly that's the first answer if we're allowing that. After that, I hear you on the bullpen. I mean, that was going into the season, the area I think people were questioning the most to begin with. After that, it would just be any of the pieces that we've discussed that can turn this into a nice season, into a really special season, if those particular players stop hitting and we're talking about multiple guys 1 through 3 entering a slump, right? So, all right, MJ Melendez got off to a nice start.
Like Bobby and Vinny aren't hitting at the same time.
Right. If they're both not hitting at the same time and you're not getting anything from a Melendez or anybody else. Right now, they're kind of getting, there's been pretty much 5 or 6 guys going at once, and only one player will have a 6 or 7 game slide, and then they get everybody back on the same page. That would be it for me. If you tell me that we're sitting here in middle of May and there's a week and a half stretch where things aren't going as great, other than injuries, suddenly you're talking about Michael Garcia still struggling, or all of a sudden Melendez is looking more like he was prior to the second half of last season. Things like that, to me, are realistic potential issues that could come up again. It wouldn't surprise you. Doesn't mean that they will. Doesn't mean that they can't eventually overcome it. But that those would be kind of the order of how I could see something playing out for a team where, as good as things are going and everybody should be buying on this being a competitive team, still recognizing, like, the pace that they are on is not, this is not the pace they're going to be on
from a starting pitching staff.
I mean, even wins, like, they're,
I guess what are the, they'd be on pace for like 103 wins or something like that. Maybe
the updated number, maybe. Yeah. Something like that. Over 100. I think
I could
it
do
is.
It. 11 divided by 17 times 162, 104 wins. Yeah, like 104.8.
Like, so obviously they're not really winning 104 games. We all can agree on that. So
well, I don't, you know, look,
you're not sure, huh?
I don't want to rule it out. No, I don't think they're winning 104 games. But honestly, but that the crazy thing about that is, I say that, but if they are going to have like a special-ish type season, like, is if all of a sudden they burst into the scene and things just click all together at once, is 95 out of the question? The crazy part about that is we have to remember how few games they won last year. If they get to 90, that might be, and I'd have to look it up, but the single greatest turnaround in Major League Baseball history? I mean, that'd be 32 wins. What's the biggest swing any team has made in Major League Baseball history? You might be thinking, like, oh, wait, didn't the Diamondbacks just make the World Series after winning, like, 60 games a couple of years ago? Yeah, but there was a swing year in between where they won, 80 or 85 games.
Biggest single-season win gains since divisions have been around. This excludes those before and after shortened season. So the 99 Diamondbacks gained 35 wins. They won 65 in 98. They got 100
in 1999. They also had Randy Johnson on that team. 1989.
Well, Cole Reagans. The same.
Right. Well, they also have Bobby Witt Jr., who was an MVP candidate. 1989 Orioles gained 33 wins. They had 54 wins in 1988. They won 87 in 89. The 2022 Orioles. So that's why their manager won manager of the year. It's why you and I talked yesterday that Matt Quatrero has a real chance at being the manager of the year. They won 52 in 2021. They won 83 in 2022. And then the 2008 Rays, they gained 31 wins, 66 in 07, 97 in 08.
I think some of that is when you go through stretches where you are being run well, you can make a significant change in your win total, which is obviously what the Royals look to do this year. They already have, 15% of their win total from last year.
It was
just
early
halfway
May.
Through April.
Early yeah. May that they got 11 wins. It was like May 10th or something last year.
Not even early May. Almost damn near halfway through the Fair. Month by the time they got there. By the way, the Royals did designate Anthony Vinziano as the 20-cent man for the doubleheader today. Pitcher usually.
Okay.
Goes. And Salvador Perez is going to catch game one. Wouldn't be held down.
And then Fermin's probably tonight, right?
So yeah, it's not even – it's a straight doubleheader today, right? So just right after. Royals will take 30, 45 minutes and then kick off another game, I guess, middle of the afternoon, 3, 4 o'clock or whatever it'll end up being today. A little faster now with the game speeding up at least a little bit. I know Jay Binkley's going to come in at 11 o'clock. We're going to talk draft with Jay, obviously, during that time. Probably get a mock draft sounder.
Yeah, they got a new
mock
draft
in there as well.
New mock draft, I'm told, is out from Bink and Chris Unocero.
And there's something very important I want to get into that took place on Tyler Dunn's podcast about some of the concerns about A.D. Mitchell, which I think are absurd, but we can get into that with Binkley at 11 o'clock. But I was thinking more about the Chiefs wide receiver spot because it's interesting for the draft because you have to factor it in at least a little into your thinking about how long do we think Rice is out? What do we do at wide receiver? And I was thinking more about Hollywood Brown. And some of this, I'll admit, comes back to something we've talked about on the show, which is this general notion to be like, just wait till they get with Reed. And I hate it because you do not have a single, nobody has, not you, nobody has a single example of a wide receiver coming into Andy Reid's system and being better than the place they were before or having a career year here or anything like that. They've had good years here or they've had the same years they had before in other locations. But I was thinking more about Hollywood and what he relates to. It's the same thing. Kelce, Rice, where he's in the lineup. I'll tell you right now, if you gave me a choice right now, Golden, you said, I will guarantee you 800 yards from Hollywood Brown, I'd lock it in. I'd be done. I'd lock in 800 yards from Hollywood Brown today. If you would guarantee me that number, I'd take it. This isn't meant to be a knock on him or what he'll be in this offense or the upside potential. I'm just telling you, rather than the swing one way or the other, if you just told me Hollywood Brown was good for 800 yards in the upcoming season for the Chiefs, I'd take it.
So let's just assume Rashee Rice is playing all 16 or 17 games for this scenario, because that could swing it, you would admit, right?
Sure.
If Hollywood Brown were,
misses six games or if he misses two.
If Hollywood Brown's playing all year and he stays healthy, but Rashee Rice misses six games, suddenly that might change your thought process.
But if he only misses two, I probably don't swing my number a lot.
Look, probably difficult not to lock in the 800. You know, I'm a little more optimistic. We did this exercise just with three or four receivers a couple weeks ago, and I can't remember the exact number I said on the show. I want to say it was above 800, though.
I think it was nine.
Yeah, so based on that, would I lock in 800? No. But I think most, if we were to put a poll question out, I would like to think most people would if we're being realistic about how the season could go. Now, I'm really optimistic even more after Patrick Mahomes' comments 2 days ago, where he was asked what has stood out other than, hey, Hollywood Brown's a deep threat wide receiver. We know that. He said he's been pleasantly surprised with his route running. And we know Andy Reid provides ultimate flexibility in your route running, right? He gives you some freedom that maybe other coaches do not give. And that kind of excites me to see what Hollywood Brown can do within that. And there's plenty of motivation for Brown. I know we can bring up MVS, but Hollywood Brown's on a one-year deal. And it's incentive laden number one. And also, he's got a chance to get paid in a huge way, whether it's from the Chiefs or anybody, after this upcoming season. So
if he can stay healthy for 17 games and get 800 yards, I still think he gets paid a pretty good amount.
And he would get a multi-year deal for sure. But all the boxes could be checked for him into what you're looking for to have a massive season. I would hesitantly lock in 800. Like I wouldn't like it. Like, does that mean
I you would do it, but you're like, oh man, I kind of want to take, it's like the non-greedy hedging of a bet.
Yeah. I feel like I'm like,
it's a good amount of profit, so I guess I'll just take it. But I, you know, I still kind of want to ride this bet out.
I feel like I'm leaving some yardage on the table. And we all know this too. We're talking specific yards. We all recognize it's not just about yardage to how someone can have a great year, right? We've probably done, I don't know if it's because of fantasy football, what we're all guilty of this when we talk about wide receivers.
Because if they're the number one offense and he has 777 yards, do you care?
Right. It's that. And it's also just in general, when we talk about any wide receiver, we all do it. Like we just say, all right, how many yards he had? That must just mean how he had. Now, if he had 500 yards, then that's a problem. But in the difference between a 1100 yard season and 900, all right, what's in there? We're big plays, game winning catches, how many touchdowns? There's a lot to go into that.
Sure. Like in touchdowns, a good number for him too has typically been 5 or 6. But if it was 800 yards and 5 touchdowns, I'm just locking it in. Look, he's only had 800 yards one time. He was close a second time. He had 769. That's within 30, right? Within the range of what you would presume. Other than that, he was close to 100 yards away and more than 200, over 200 yards away the other two times. Look, a lot of times for him, it is very simply health. In the year he had 709 yards, he only started 10 games and only played in 12. Would he have gotten over 800 if he played in that number? Sure. But that's part of what I'm factoring into locking in 800 yards. If I lock in 800 yards, I assume he's played 14 or more games, which is an important, probably more important than his yardage total at the end of the year for me is his availability. Because last year, the biggest part of the problem is they didn't have the guy from a couple of years ago, Juju Smith-Schuster, just showed up. And no matter how the game was going, he'd just get you the 50 grind out yards required in order to like move the offense along. They were the number one scoring offense that year. And Juju Smith-Schuster wasn't some world-beating wide receiver taking the league by storm. He was available. And he was available to get a third down catch on 6 yards that they needed to continue the drive. I am more interested in that in Hollywood Brown than the yardage total, to your point on
moving the chains on
that
third down.
That's why
like
I would,
that.
Yeah, that's why I'd take, that's why I'd lock in the total.
Yeah. I think he's better than that. I think he's going to bring more to the table than that, but that's not a crazy number. Like nobody should be ashamed of the 800 yard season and 5 touchdowns. That would be perfectly fine. I just am a little more greedy than that, I think, for what I think he can be in a Chiefs uniform, especially since, depending on what they do in the draft in the first round, if they draft a wide receiver in the first round and depending on the style of wide receiver, that could also shift your thought process. Because what you described with Juju, let's say they go get a, you said you want them to draft. Yes. We're doing the wish list, Leggett, right. Or whatever. Yep. Okay. Let's say, is it Leggett or I think that's how you pronounce it. We've all been saying it differently. I think,
figure it out when he gets drafted,
that style receiver, bigger bodied wide receiver. If that's the guy they draft, he might be the guy what you're describing, which is a little bit more of a on third down. He's the guy that is able to move the sticks a little bit better. And Hollywood Brown brings them an element to the offense they haven't had in 2 years.
I'll be honest. And if they're the number one offense in the NFL, I don't care what Hollywood Brown's final statistics are.
Fair.
He can have 475 yards. If they're the number one scoring offense in the league, I don't care. Because he's at least adding an element that's bringing him back to where they were. Or that means they're the number one offense, which means Kelsey returned to a 1,200-yard receiver. Rashee Rice is the number one receiver on this team. And Hollywood Brown is exactly what you said. He's MVS from a couple of years ago. He gets you 600 yards, and they're all for 50 yards at a time. Fine by me. I don't really care the order of operations on that. But that's, again, why I would lock in the number. For Hollywood, I think there's a level of greed you should be careful with because this is it. Like the text line said from the 816, he's getting 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns. 1,000 yards, 59 yards per game, 17 games he's getting that. Okay, so just to be clear, he's only played in 16 games twice out of 4 years, so 40% of the time. Of those 2 times, he only got to 1,000 once, barely, at 1,008, but he got there at 146 targets. He's never getting 146 targets for this team. Like, I honest to God, I don't know what the odds are on it. There's almost no bet I wouldn't take to say he's not getting 1,000. Like, and it's not a knock on him. Because, again, I just think there's a lot of mouths to feed in what is a much deeper offense than it was a year ago. But every year, we've been doing this show, and I've been hosting Kansas City Radio for almost 10 years now. Every single year for 10 consecutive years, I have had to have the same argument with listeners or fans or people on social media about the, like, just wait till he gets here. And it's never once come to fruition. So I don't know why I have to, like, I don't know why we have to, like, we can just have reasonable expectations for Hollywood. I don't have to bury him. And you don't have to put him on some unrealistic pedestal, like not the collective.
I got you.
I was looking right at you when I said it. Like
I would say
it
this
was
though.
You who was
I would say this though. it's not. This is not the same thing as Richie James and me last year being like,
You just liked, you wanted Richie James to have 500 yards. It's way different. Or 600 yards.
600 yards or whatever. But I thought he had a chance to get to 7. This is, Hollywood Brown is a much better player than Richie James. And I don't think it's.
And Kadarius Toney, who is a player we probably did it with.
And we talk about availability for Hollywood Brown. Yes, the 17 games is not a sure thing. He's also not Kadarius Toney in terms of availability either.
Yeah, but this is what it says. Let's be clear. He had Lamar and Murray, not Pat. That's the same thing I had to hear about Kadarius Toney. It's the same thing I had to hear about MVS. It's the same thing I had to hear about.
Wouldn't you agree, though, that Hollywood
Chris
Brown is better?
I mean, I can go back on that, Chris Conley, but like, but I can 10
agree,
years of this.
Wouldn't you agree, though, that Hollywood Brown is a better wide receiver than two of the names you just mentioned, and MVS and Kadarius Toney?
Yes, but I also think that's why his number is 800. I told you when they got MVS, I'd have taken the 650 out of him because that's what he was. I'm just looking for you to maintain your level of production. Gold, we actually had this conversation once with a different wide receiver. I think everybody thinks that it's the quarterback who's holding the wide receiver back. And sometimes it's just there's a cap to the wide receiver. The one you had correctly pointed out about is Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson was a wide receiver that for years, people were like, just wait.
Yeah.
You get this guy a real quarterback and they're going to unlock this secret weapon that's existed inside this man's body forever. It's just not true. It turns out it was the opposite. The reason why they were that level of productive is they didn't have anyone else to throw to but Allen Robinson. You know, he was the only choice in the offense for all these years. I'm not like, what's funny about the 800 yards is that is not meant to be a, like, I'm trying to put a cap on. I'm just saying I take it. That is a good level of production. I think some of this is, you know, there was a Twitter poll yesterday that actually really points to this about reasonable expectation based on draft. There's a Twitter poll put out. It got like 5,000 votes on Marvin Harrison Jr. And it had said, if Marvin Harrison Jr. has Amari Cooper's career production, would you deem it as he met expectation, exceeded expectation, was below expectation? And 80% of the vote failed his expectation. Right. We're like, I'm sorry, excuse me. Amari Cooper has had a really good career.
Right, but that is also, one, it's Twitter poll, but to your point.
Sure.
But also, that's how nuts the expectation and belief in what Marvin Harrison Junior can be,
sure,
though, right?
I mean, he's got almost 10,000 yards receiving and 60 touchdowns.
But his dad's a Hall of Famer, right? So people are, fair or not, unfair, by the way, are saying, like, well, that's what they're expecting. Like, that Marvin Harrison Jr. has got to be a Hall of Fame wide receiver. Like,
I'll tell you right now. But if you're a fan, if your team takes Marvin Harrison Jr., you should lock it. If they just said, all right, through age 29 season, he can be a Mark, lock it in. Are you kidding me? He's 29 years old. He's got 10,000 yards receiving and 60 touchdowns. Lock that in. He's a Pro Bowl caliber wide receiver.
I'll be really interested to see when we get closer to training camp, when the over-unders start coming out for player props and all that for the season. Where is Hollywood Brown's number sitting at? Is it over-under 715.5? Is it over? By the way, I would take the over. Sounds like you would too. What would be the number where you'd be like, oh, I got to take the under? Like, if I told you his over-under was 835.5 for Hollywood Brown, are you taking the under or the over? 835.5 yards.
Under.
You take the under. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, again, he's a rookie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just like.
Or not Hollywood Brown. Did I say? Who did I say?
I knew who you meant. You had said Marvin Harrison Jr., but you meant Hollywood Brown. That's fine. I'd take the under, but still, the point's valid.
Yeah.
No, I think I'd try to take the under. But, I mean, not with, like, extreme confidence. I don't think it's crazy to think he could get 900 yards. I think it's crazy to think he could get 1,000. 1,000 in this offense, unless Rashee Rice misses six. Like, if it's six or more, we're probably having a conversation. But I still think, even with the trouble he's in, if he gets suspended this year in particular, because the legal process could take a while, I still think it lands in the 2-4 range. They don't typically suspend someone up to 6 for this kind of violation, but I guess we'll just see how the legal process stands out.
All right, coming up next, one thing that is more likely than the other come the draft next Thursday, and a wild report about Bill Belichick and his former boss not helping him out at any bit with future coaching aspirations. We'll get to that next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
I did look it up in the break, Gold, because somebody on the text line said 800 yards production. That's not good. 48 yards per game. That's like three catches. There were two teams in the NFL who had three wide receivers or more, or just three. It wasn't more. With 800 yards or more last season. Just two. That's it. Kansas City had two guys with over 800 yards. Travis Kelce, obviously, and Rashi Rice. Only two teams had three. Minnesota was one. Addison, Hockenson, and Justin Jefferson was... So, I mean, you're like, okay, that in San Francisco, who had Ayuk, Debo, and George Kittle. That's it. With 800. So, like, 800's not as crazy as you think. There were only two teams in the NFL who managed three guys with 800 yards or more last year. That's, again, why you lock it in. You'd be one of three last year if you were able to accomplish that. That goal.
Yeah, and for the Chiefs offense, though, we all know last year was not the norm, though, for them. You know, I guess sure. That's the only thing I would count. I know it didn't happen for a bunch of teams, but we're used to seeing this offense as a top three, top five offense and clicking, and we know last year was certainly not like saying, like, well, last year they had that. That's not what people want, though, was last year's offense, right? And that's sure. Not what we've seen.
I'm just saying that's pretty common across the league. I would guess most Chiefs teams don't have three 800-yard receivers. Like, if we went back a year before... Where they were the number one, they had two guys.
Would have been.
And only Kelce and Juju. Marquez was third with 687. It's just not, you can be a number one offense without Hollywood Brown getting 1,000 yards.
Yeah, I think, you know? Naturally, though, when somebody is being capped at 800 yards.
You feel like you're selling yourself short.
Right.
And that's exactly how you said you felt.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we'll get back into the wide receiver position, I'm sure, with Bink. He's going to join us in studio. He's already in the building, by the way. He'll join us in studio at 11 o'clock. We'll talk all things draft. Him and Christian Ocero put out their latest mock draft. I don't know if it's 2.0 or 2.5. We'll find out from Bink coming up. I did see the mock, and I think people would be excited if the Chiefs do what Bink has them doing in his latest mock draft. I'll leave it at that until he joins us in studio. But when you look at the draft for the Chiefs and the options of positions, we have gone back and forth about, all right, wide receiver, offensive tackle, between you and I, those are the two positions we've kind of keyed in on. But what if they just say, you know what, out of the first two picks, they're not taking either position. What's more likely?
I've seen mocks where they don't take a wide receiver in the first three rounds, and I've seen mocks where they don't take a tackle for the first three rounds.
To me, it's way more realistic, though. If you told me that over the first three picks, they don't take a tackle, I could see that. I would disagree with that, but I could see that happening versus they're going to go not draft a wide receiver after last year, after bringing Hollywood Brown on a one-year deal, after maybe having a guy get suspended for a couple games. Yeah. I just don't think there's any scenario, man, with the draft where out of their first three selections, one of them isn't a wide receiver. I could see out of the first three, one of them not being a tackle, despite me disagreeing, because they could perhaps look at Wanya Morris and say, hey, well, we actually feel good about him, and we can run this whole thing back and bring back a veteran like Donovan Smith or somebody else at left tackle again. I think that would make more sense. And you could get me on board with that a lot easier than like, oh yeah, they didn't draft a wide receiver until their fourth pick.
I would be worried. Or I'd just be like, what the hell's going on here? Because you know what? You know why it would be more concerning to me? I'm more confident that you just go with the Wanye, or you didn't like the guy at the draft who was available at 32, couldn't trade up, whatever. The second and third round guys weren't of the talent level that that made you take them. So you're like, all right, they're either going to go with Wanye or they're going to go back into the rando veteran market for this year for left tackle, and I'll live my life. At wide receiver, if they didn't take one for the first three rounds, it would make me think they're back in on Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney, and they're like, we're doing it again, baby. We're back. And I'll be like, I'm not saying they can't be on the roster, and I'm not saying you can't give them every shot to re-earn a spot on the roster in August. They are no longer given a job, in my opinion. And by not taking a wide receiver in the first three rounds, you're just like, come on in, the water's warm. We've got a plan for you again. And I'm not really willing to go down that road. That's why I feel like that one's far less likely. Tackle. I think all it takes for them not to take a tackle is for the wrong guy not to be available right around that 25 to 40 range. And I look, if they take one in the third round, like that's where I'd be surprised. If they didn't get to it by then. But by then, you know that you were talking about incredibly flawed tackles. You and I both know that. You're talking about guys who have massive problems. Either they straight up do not fit the size requirement that Andy Reid has typically gone for in offensive tackle. We've joked about that and
Oh, don't get Bink going on the arm.
Look,
I'm not there at 11 o'clock. Don't worry.
I've mentioned it multiple times on the show, but that is a very real thing for people who play tackle for Andy Reid. And or, you know, like, so either they're not doing that, or that they were just like, well, they started 7 games at left tackle in college and they could be a guard or they could be a tackle or they might be a right if things go well, because that's what you're talking about, the third round. And if that's the case, they might pass on it for a superior player who's, you know, like, less of a risk at that stage.
I mean, look at Wanya Morris. Now, he's entering year 2 now, but wasn't he a third or fourth round pick?
He had like a heart problem.
And he was a third. Did he have medical issues? I remember what it was. I'm not sure on that one. I couldn't remember. But he was a third round pick, though, right? Or something. So
I think that there was questions about his, you can't look up Wanya Morris heart. It just brings up RMB stuff.
Oh. I thought that was Trey Smith a couple of years ago that had the health stuff. That's why I was getting confused.
And maybe it's just a head injury.
Well, because Trey fell. I think Trey.
Trey had the.
It might have been Trey. Okay, it might have been
Trey. That was. I was like, I wasn't sure. Anyway,
it was different injuries for
Wanya.
Point being
was just, all right, Wanya Morris was drafted in middle round, and now we're talking about. Okay, we're talking about him maybe having a chance to be the starting left tackle.
Yeah.
It's a different when you're a rookie and you're asked to do that. So they should draft an offensive lineman or two in this year's draft. I just think if there's going to be one of the two wide receiver or tackle position that's not drafted in the first couple picks, it's more likely it's a tackle not getting drafted than a wide receiver, just based off of, I think, of a clear need at that position.
Yeah. Again, it's just a little bit different. It's like, what's more likely that they just avoid tackle? Partially because that's what they've done. I also just think that Brett Veach, in the short history that we have with him, because it's still kind of short, I don't know, it's long by NFL standards, but it's short as far as like the number of examples you have of them doing it, right? Which makes sense. Every single year where they've had a massive problem at a certain position, he has gone so gung-ho to solve it. And you can't argue with the results. So it's like, our offensive line stinks. They went gung-ho to solve it. They won a Super Bowl. And, you know, like, whatever it is, our defense is holding us, but gung-ho to solve it, they win a Super Bowl. So, like, anytime he has just been like, I'm all in to solve this problem. And look, the early results on wide receiver is, we talked about this. We think he got the best free agent wide receiver available to the Chiefs. Once it turned out that none of the guys who were talking about either getting released or not getting extensions or being traded were all just back with their original team.
Higgins, it was really Evans and Pittman were not available.
Yeah, it was really just Hollywood or
Ridley.
Calvin Ridley. So he got the best free agent wide receiver available to him. If they go back out and sign a first, like, it just seems too likely they're going to do a first or second or third round pick. Maybe 2 out of those. That's why it just doesn't seem all that likely at this point.
We'll get to an interesting report out of New England that has to deal with Bill Belichick and why maybe he didn't get a head coaching gig in Atlanta in a second. I noticed you played Uptown Girl coming back from break. Did you see the controversy around Billy Joel and everything that happened over the weekend?
Yeah, the whole concert getting cut off or whatever?
On CBS, I guess, was it Sunday night? They were supposed to, or they aired Billy Joel, the 100th show live at Madison Square Garden. He's had basically a residency essentially at Madison Square Garden. So there in the show, it gets to, you know, his most popular song ever, Piano Man. Okay.
So
middle of the song, something with their programming timing. Everybody thought it was the local affiliates, but it wasn't. Cut off. Just so everybody freaked out. I guess it was trying to watch. You know, you're watching the whole thing. Maybe you're sitting there and you're Piano Man. I can't wait. I keep watching. And then they cut it right in the middle of Piano Man. Not, you know, just the broadcast or whatever. It cut out some parts of the country, not everywhere, in the middle of Piano Man. And so they blamed it on in the Eastern and Central time zones, a programming error. They're re-airing it its entirety this Friday night now. But people freaked out. They apologized to Billy Joel and everything.
Apologize to Billy Joel
and their fans.
He doesn't get to dictate
and his fans.
Their TV choices. The fans' stuff.
Well, I mean,
because if you were locked into that,
they apologize to him because
good.
I mean, look, if you've got a special airing on network television and then it cuts out before it's over, especially during your most popular song ever,
it should speed it up. You know?
Oh, what
was he behind set? You know? How far past was he?
I'm guessing he was on time.
Can I say? Borderline risky thing to say on the air based on
you don't like Billy Joel
people's opinions of my other music opinion. That's not what I'm gonna say. Billy Joel's fine. He's not like, wow, I love Billy Joel. He's fine. Perfectly good artist.
Okay.
No complaints about Billy Joel. For like listening purposes in the car, for like this, live versions of songs stink. They're way worse.
Oh, I don't disagree with that.
Get in the studio, give me the recorded version. Live versions of songs are just worse. Unless you are experiencing the concert in person. That is the only time in which it might conceivably be better. Other than that, I would just like the studio version of your song.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to, I don't think that's that controversial.
Okay. I was a little worried that this wasn't going to go over.
I agree with you. Now, obviously, if you're at the concert, whole different conversation. But yeah, driving around and you happen to hear the live performance, and yeah, it's not as good. Just give me the studio version, please.
Like, if they play the random radio one and you're like, and the crowd cheering, I'm like, this person stinks. There's a reason why they went to a studio and recorded it a million times and had it master edited so that it sounds good. There's a reason why that process exists.
I think, I mean, it must be a popular thing, though, because Apple has, like, live music, live sessions that you can listen to of playlists from artists that they have recording themselves live or whatnot.
And, like, some of the jam band ones, like, I don't need, like, you know, like, Pete Sweeney, big fan of Dave Matthews Band. That's why we do the intro. I don't need a 12-minute version of Ants Marching where they just, like, play the guitar for 7 straight minutes. I'm good. The 4.5 minutes was fine. It was a good, solid number, and I'd like to stick to it.
The funniest thing, because people were legit upset about it getting cut off. Like, I guess it cut off during, like, right in the middle, before it got to the last, like, la, la, de, la, or whatever. And Billy Joel had TV anchors from some of the CBS affiliates out there tweeting, apologizing. This one from one of the affiliates, quote, "As a man who grew up right next to Billy Joel's hometown, who went to the last play at Shea, it was my duty to apologize to everyone about cutting off our telecast." That was a sports director of CBS affiliate in Tampa. "Not to get into the weeds, but there was a special report after the Masters, and it wasn't accounted for by the powers that be beyond this building." So I guess the Masters running late is what caused it. Someone from Indiana, "I apologize to the people who were enjoying Billy Joel.
I apologize."
And all these anchors from all these affiliates across the country apologize. People were pissed.
Apologies.
That sounds like it. No, I somehow.
But yeah, it's re-airing Friday night if that's your thing.
If you missed it.
That's one of those where you just put on the DVR, and if you really are feeling that, you don't need to watch.
He should
on the
lean
DVR.
In. He should play like a 22-minute Man.
It's just rebroadcasting. He's not doing the concert again.
He should do a new concert. Give us the last thing.
It was the 100.
So just going to re-air it?
Well, yeah. Why would he? He's not going to do a whole new concert.
Well, he does. He's done 100 shows there. It's not like he's not performing there all the time. I don't know if he's doing one this Friday.
Don't the Knicks have a playoff game coming up at the Garden anyway?
Oh, yeah.
It wouldn't be the 100th one anyways.
It was the 100th.
Yeah, I was going to say this one would be the 101st.
God, the Warriors stunk last night.
Oh, they were terrible.
I know this isn't a big NBA market.
Blow it up.
Woof.
Blow it up.
They need to just. Steph Curry needs to do what most NBA players do. Go find a good team to play for. Try to go get another championship. Get out.
Klay Thompson was horrific last night. So that whole thing, that was the last go for that group. Sure. It's pretty clear. And it needs to happen.
Someone they're saying publicly.
Someone described it well. They're like, you know, they had an unbelievable run, right? I mean, what they did, that 5-year dynasty run was incredible. But it's time to, like, basically, like, last night, someone described as, like, visiting your grandmother at the retirement home, and unfortunately, you just know she's not all the way there. And you just choose to remember the good times instead if you're a Warriors fan. You don't want to remember what happened last night. That was pitiful.
No.
Good for the Kings. Anyway.
I read the article, if you haven't yet, ESPN just put out a story this morning about the, like, the behind the scenes, as they put it, of the coaching search by Bill Belichick to find a new team. And there are a couple of things that are fascinating about it. But one big takeaway before we get into some of the details, including one from Dave Tepper that should horrify you if you want to go anywhere near that franchise. But the takeaway I had is that Bill Belichick is at least claiming to the people who are trying to hire him, he doesn't want control of every facet. He is fine to have a general manager for the first time in his career, which is exactly what Andy Reid did when he left Philadelphia, which means if he means that, and you think he means that in the interview process, I think he'd be kind of foolish not to hire Bill Belichick. If he's truthful in that. The one thing that makes me think he's only half serious is that it sounds like he wants all of his old boys back in town, like he just bring back McDaniels and Patricia and be the same assistant coaches as before. And that would concern me. But if he really doesn't want to be the general manager and instead it can be collaborative in the, like, hey, I'd like a player that looks like this, please take a player that's somewhat in that range, like Andy has done with Brett Veach, well, then I don't think Bill Belichick's so lost in the coaching game he can't handle that a little bit. What would be the, other than the age, what would be the fear of bringing in Bill Belichick if he doesn't want total control?
We said it at the time when this was going down, when he was interviewing with the Falcons, like this notion that, like, the game has passed him by. I completely disagree. You know, the general manager decision-making and all that, that's the problem. And if it's true that he doesn't need the control, then I'm actually stunned the Falcons didn't hire him. But in that same story from ESPN, Cody, it mentions, and the Patriots have already come out and denied it, of course, but it mentions that Robert Kraft was contacted by Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, and basically torched the whole thing. Like, you know, you get a recommendation, like your former boss or whatever, trying to recommend you, Cody, and he just says, yeah, he sucked, he was hard to work with and all that, and then you didn't get the job because he ruined it for you or whatever, right? That's basically what the report suggests. Yeah,
Robert Kraft threw his guy under the bus.
It suggests that Robert Kraft said he was difficult to work with and he has way too big of an ego and he's arrogant and all this kind of stuff.
He's the single greatest coach in NFL history. I guess I'd be surprised if he didn't have an ego. Does that make sense? I'd be stunned if they were like, you know what? You'd be shocked. Bill Belichick, most humble guy I've ever met, doesn't think a single accomplishment is his. He's the single most successful coach in NFL history. Of course he has an ego. But what the hell? Like, a lot of this, you know what this made me think? Bill Belichick may never get a job again. Because NFL ownership circle is so tight. It's a boys club in the most boys club sense of it of all time. And the only guy who can vouch for Bill, because the only guy who's really worked with him, is throwing his ass under the bus. How the hell is he ever going to get a job again? By the end of this, he apparently was a head front runner for the Atlanta job. And by the end of it, he finished behind three assistants. Mm-hmm. Like, he got shoved down the list.
When he didn't get the Falcons job, I thought then, though, it became pretty clear and a real possibility that he's never going to coach again in the NFL.
And I didn't think so until I read this, but man. Ooh.
In the ESPN piece, it says, in a conversation with Arthur Blank, Bob Kraft delivered a stark assessment of Belichick's character. According to a source who spoke to two people, a close Kraft friend and a longtime Belichick confidant, the source quoted the Belichick source as saying, Robert called Arthur to warn him not to trust Bill. That account was backed up, the source said, by the close Kraft friend. Multiple sources said that Kraft spoke with some candor to Blank about Belichick, though the sources declined to elaborate. One source close to Belichick said Kraft was a big part of why the Falcons passed on hiring him, which that's brutal, man. That's messed up. That's definitely brutal. Now, in that same story, it says Belichick is believed to be biding his time until next January for openings on teams, as he has total confidence that he could maybe be one of the candidates for the Cowboys, Eagles, and the Giants.
Although that story says that the pickings are going to be slim for him again next year. Look, somebody's going to take a chance on him, I think. But the ownership things becomes a real problem. Look, it was obvious that they didn't get along at the end there.
Mm-hmm.
But how is that more on Bill Belichick than Robert Kraft? And the problem is exactly what the text line says from 903. Robert Kraft saying someone has a big ego is hilarious. Because based on this conversation, Robert Kraft thinks he is more responsible for all the championships they won than Bill Belichick is.
But you know how
that's the only way I can take that information.
But you know, I mean, Robert Kraft's the owner. So what you said a few minutes ago, you know, ultimately we can say he obviously has an ego. Yep, nobody's firing Robert Kraft. You know what I mean? That's a different. Robert Kraft's not trying to get a job anywhere.
No.
And that, Bill Belichick is trying to get a job still. Not that he needs it, but he's trying to still get a job.
If you needed any more proof of the ego of owners, one of the most damning things in this entire piece had nothing to do with Bill Belichick, had nothing to do with Robert Kraft, had nothing to do with Arthur Blank. Instead, Panthers owner Dave Tepper. They were going through what happened at each little spot. Like, hey, why didn't this one work out? He was interested in Washington because he grew up in that area. And like going through essentially why every job didn't work for Bill Belichick. The reason why the Panthers one didn't work out, it said the Panthers briefly discussed Bill Belichick as a possibility. But one of the things that was going to be a hangup, according to this report, is that Dave Tepper likes to spend time critiquing the play calling of his head coaches after the games in meetings with them based on some like analytics report he gets. And I thought, oh my God, I would go nowhere near that job ever. Mm-hmm. If that's the level of oversight, an owner who has no backing of football, no knowledge, like other than the fact he simply bought a team. No chance. I am not doing that with Dave Tepper. Are you kidding me?
That's the danger, because there was reporting that Frank Wright, who we all know got fired midseason, that Bryce Young was not his pick. And the report suggested that Dave Tepper wanted Bryce Young. And I'm not saying Bryce Young is just done and can never figure it out, but early on, it looks like that was a massive mistake. And we'll see what Bryce Young becomes in this league. I think it's too early to say, oh, he just sucks. But that story came out, and then you couple it with this. Yeah, it's a problem. Sorry, Panthers fans, you're stuck with that. I know everybody has complaints about every owner. We talked about the NFLPA grades, and Clark Hunt was an F-. I'll still tell you, as a sports fan, just fan of any team you grew up rooting for, I'll always take the owner that is more hands off than the one that is hands on. I always will. Some people, I mean, Jerry Jones is the prime example of that, right? Like, I will always prefer the owner that doesn't think he knows all the football things as well, that relies on people that are smart. Brett
it's
Veach,
okay to ask questions and try
Andy
to be
Reid, among others. Let them. I'm not saying that Clark Hunt's not involved in big decisions. Like, he had to sign off on trading Tyreek Hill. I believe that that's how that usually works. But in general, I don't think Clark Hunt is saying, you know what, you guys should draft Trent McDuffie. I don't believe that's what's happening. Whereas Dave Tepper is making football decisions.
It sounds like it's even worse than what you described of like, hey, should we take Trent McDuffie? It sounds like he's out here being like, hey, what did you think about this pitch call on 2nd and 10? Like, look, Dave, I just got like some stuff going on. I can't be sitting here while you.
I think Frank Wright's probably thrilled not to be in that room anymore.
I would be. Boy, Frank Reich, what a tough coaching run he had. He was a head coach and it seemed like it was going pretty successful. And then his quarterback quit, just straight up quit. And then he got in with the worst ownership group in the NFL. Hard.
Think about the last
hard
two owners.
To be successful for Frank Reich, if you're that.
The last two owners he worked for. Jim Irsay, who's problematic, and then now Dave Tepper. Or what, Dave Tepper before, yeah.
It's not great. It's definitely not great.
What's bugging Drew?
If this is a lot to go on, this is not a society. This is anarchy!
All right, guys. We're going to take it to college. Deion Sanders, not about telling everybody where Travis Hunter is going to play and where Shadur is going to play, and he's only going to accept this. But he's not really involved in this part of why I'm a little bit upset, but I'm still upset a little bit at Deion. Shiloh Sanders, one of his sons, plays on the defensive side of the ball, sent out a post on Instagram, said, any defensive transfers, DM me. Any offensive guys, DM Shador.
Sounds smart.
Hang on. On the bottom of the post, he said in parentheses, this is not last chance you. Anytime you have to reference this is not last chance you, it's a problem. If this is something that's going on, and I get that players, I understand the aspect of players can be your biggest recruiters.
Right.
Yeah, should
but
be.
But they're an unserious program. They have already lost many players in the portal from their team last year, including 5-star Cormani McClain, top-tier DB. And yes, they add players, but the way that they're run, they're never going to make a college football playoff the way that Deion currently is constructing the roster, the way that he's allowing things to go. They had 50-plus guys they brought in the transfer portal last year. Didn't go great. They have 25 guys they've already added here, but they've lost some. To give you the numbers of transfers from teams that made the college football playoff last year, Not a single one is above 9. Alabama had 5 transfers they brought in. Michigan had 8 they brought in. Washington had 9 they brought in. Texas had 5 they brought in. Of the teams that just missed out, Georgia only brought in 8 transfers. Ohio State brought in 9. FSU brought in 11. Missouri only brought in 12.
That's not nothing. I mean, that's
jumping, using the portal to bring in talent that's going to play right away is not the way to run your program in college football and basketball. It makes complete sense because you're not bringing in as many guys. But if you're bringing in 50 new players to a roster and completely flipping a roster, and he's going to get to 35 or 40 again this year because he's losing guys, and he's already at 25, and the window just opened again, it's not a way to win college football games.
He won a lot more than Colorado did before.
He won 3 more.
Look, you know where I was at during the season. The overreaction was crazy to me after a 1 win against TCU. You know where I stood on that. I have no problem with the players, though, on social media recruiting other players. Like that's not a problem.
Seems
to me
like good business.
Whatsoever.
Well, no.
What's interesting is to your point about recruiting is that the report was that Deion Sanders hasn't left Boulder to actually go and recruit.
Yeah, he hasn't done anything.
He doesn't go out and recruit. Now, his excuse, he was playing the game pretty good. He flipped it around and said, well, I can't do it because if I go to a high school in Florida, then the other coaches are going to wonder why I didn't go to their high school. I'm like, that's a convenient way to flip it around. He doesn't go out and recruit. He hopes they come to him.
Or have his kids do it for him. That's the problem that I have. It's not anything about Deion's coaching style, but I don't know. It just bothers me a little bit.
All right, we're a little late. We got to get to a break. That's what's bugging Drew. Maybe we can revisit this with Bink because Jay Binkley joins us in studio for the next hour. We'll talk about his latest mock draft and if he agrees with what process the Chiefs should take with their top pick.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.